Sai Baba, the Holy Man and the Psychiatrist by Samuel H. Sandweiss, M.D. The book was copyrighted in 1975 by Samuel H. Sandweiss. The dedication is simply to Sai Baba. We begin with a foreword by Vinayak Krishna Gokak, Bangalore, India. Dr. Samuel Sandweiss, in his thought-provoking book on Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai Baba, has opened up three main avenues of communication: a fascinating narration of his own experiences with Baba, his probe as a psychiatrist into the roots of psychiatry, and his consequent discovery that what passes as psychiatry is an incomplete science, and that quite essential additions have to be made to it from the field of spiritual awareness to make it truly effective, and the reproduction from Baba's writings and speeches of passages which are regarded by Dr. Sam Rice as key passages for an exploration of Baba's teachings. Turning over the pages in which these key passages are printed, one can easily see that Dr. Sandweiss's choice is a happy one. Baba on avatarhood, Baba on the nine forms of devotion, Baba on the relation of the individual to society, Baba on sadhana. These and other pivotal quotations take us to the heart of Satya Sai philosophy. Dr. Sandweiss's own experiences with Baba are not only interesting, but fairly typical. He is first rendered unsettled and unmade, and then remade in the light of spirit. The monkey mind crumbles gradually and gives up its struggle and is replaced by a genuine sensitiveness and receptivity, allowing his skepticism to fly as high and as long as it can. He still realizes that if there is any honesty in doubt, it has to admit and accept the existence of a soul and a transcendental reality, a new spiritual dimension to the universe. He also grasps the truth about the role of the avatar in human affairs. In short, Dr. Sandweiss undergoes a profound transformation. He becomes a different person, gaining, as he does, a new spiritual dimension. This change is reflected in the consequent attitude towards his own profession, that of a psychiatrist. A scientist of consciousness is required. Psychiatry itself has to change into an art of healing based on the science of consciousness. Dr. Sandweiss may raise a hornet's nest around him by this strange assertion, but truth has to be accepted as truth, even if the heavens move around you and fall. It is his sensitive discernment, his honesty and forthrightness in the course of his exploration that will endear Dr. Sandweiss to the readers of this book. A transparent sincerity permeates this piece of writing. The writer takes his readers into confidence regarding all the changes in his thoughts and moods. We come to know every bend of the road he has taken and the direction of each step. This is what makes it a genuine document of human sensitivity and of the psychology of profound inner changes. Dr. Sandweiss is a valued friend, and we cherish many deep interests in common. I am very happy that I was given the opportunity to write these few lines by way of an appreciation of his book. The following is an introduction to the book. I first met Satya Sai Baba 3 years ago. I went to India as a Western psychiatrist to study the psychology of religion at first hand, and left with a deep sense of mystery about a being I could not comprehend. Sai Baba says, quote, "My life is my message," end quote. He teaches about spirituality in a universal language, attracting the attention of people from all over the world, all walks of life, and all religious beliefs. He is breathing new life into age-old truths for millions. He says, quote, "There is only one caste, the caste of humanity. There is only one language, the language of the heart. There is only one religion, the religion of love. There is only one God, and He is omnipresent. End quote. What is it about this world teacher that is so captivating? His followers believe him to be much more than a revered spiritual leader. Scientists, educators, leaders of government and public figures, as well as the poor, the weak, and the sick, the whole spectrum of humanity attest to the claim that Sai Baba is capable of the most extraordinary feats. It is reported that he can materialize objects from thin air and is capable of remarkable clairvoyant, telepathic, and healing powers, that he is able to transform himself into other forms and entities and transport himself great distances instantaneously, that he has been seen in two or more places at once. The scope of his reputed powers boggles the mind. It is in fact thought by his followers to extend beyond the limitations of time and space. To them, this charismatic and mysterious man is an avatar, a superhuman embodiment of the divine in human form. It is hard, to put it mildly, for most Westerners to take such claims seriously. Yet the caliber of people convinced of Sai Baba's paranormal powers and the increasing documentation available on him are impressive. Dr. S. Bhagavantam, for example, physicist, former scientific advisor to India's defense ministry, and past president of the Indian Science Congress Association, describes himself as a, quote, a rational man, practically an agnostic, who would not accept anything without a scientific explanation, end quote. This is how he has resolved what was once a conflict between his scientific training and the evidence of his senses. He says, quote, in our laboratories, we scientists may swear by reason, but we know that every time we have added a little to what we know, we have learned of the existence of many other things, the true nature of which we do not know. Thus, while adding to knowledge, we add more to our ignorance too. What we know is becoming smaller and smaller fraction of what we do not know. How do I reconcile my background of science with what Sai Baba does? I have seen miracles performed by Baba, perhaps in the thousands during the 15 years that I have known him. Materializations of an infinite variety of physical objects, healings of every description. I must confess that with the logic I know and the training I have, I cannot accept that Sai Baba is like you and me. He can transcend the laws of physics and chemistry. I have therefore to describe and to declare that he is a phenomenon, that he is a transcendental being, that he is divine. End quote. The world today appears on the brink of insanity. Half its population may be starving or undernourished. We are witness to shootings on the streets, suicides and terrorist attacks on a daily basis. The most grotesque inhumanities to man and a virtual rape of the land are practiced by us as a way of life. We are caught up in an absurd infatuation with weaponry and war, and a selfish preoccupation with ourselves. Everyone is a guru. The bookstores filled with books supposedly showing the way attest to this fact, but nothing seems to work. We are lost in a myriad of ideas, a confounding whirlwind of impressions and experiences without direction or discipline. It is crucial that we learn to discern truth and find direction. Yet to many of us, a search for fundamental answers to personal and social problems seems futile and meaningless. My own search for meaning and understanding led to a medical education and then into the field of psychiatry. But 9 years of psychiatric training and practice and a comprehensive investigation by participation of what one might call the human potential movement provided few answers. Promises of the attainment of deeper insight and an expansion of consciousness prove shallow and without substance. Is there really such a thing as humanity's infinite potential, an ability to so transform one's consciousness as to discover and merge with a divine, infinite, or eternal dimension of being? I was beginning to be convinced that such a search was an exercise in futility. In such a mood, I turned to the East and came upon Sai Baba. Here was a teacher, a scientist of consciousness, who taught that our true nature is not bound by time or space, and is in fact infinite, immutable, eternal, who proclaimed that behind all forms and objects there is spirit, and that all creation is based upon the will of the spiritual dimension, that our truest identity is an incorporeal state of pure bliss and love. His followers believe that Sai Baba's life itself is concrete proof of his possession of knowledge profound enough and energy sufficiently powerful to help them achieve the deepest kind of self-realization. But how can one determine whether this Indian mystic and holy man, still obscure to the West, is even a fraction of what his followers believe him to be? The crux of the matter for many Westerners is whether or not he can, in fact, demonstrate powers that concretely prove the reality of those dimensions of which he teaches. This book is an attempt to describe my direct observation and personal experience of some of these powers. It is the outcome of a soul's struggle to comprehend phenomena in which the West does not generally believe. I have tried to prepare the Western reader for the alien territory which he will encounter here, and to relate what I observed to psychiatric concepts with which most of us are at least somewhat familiar. This is in spite of the fact that I came to find modern psychiatry quite limited in its capacity to understand this type of phenomena. The reality of this holy man, his apparently advanced level of consciousness, and his manner of relating to people and environment could not be satisfactorily contained or explained by the concepts and principles I have learned in my years of psychiatric experience. Until recently, the phenomena which are so much a part of his way of life have been almost exclusively the domain of saints and mystics. These are scientists, if you will, whose field of investigation is the dynamics of expanded consciousness, described by mystics as cosmic awareness, by the world's religions as divine or God consciousness, and by Western psychology in the 20th century as super consciousness. Non-ordinary levels of awareness first became subject matter for Western psychology in 1908 with William James's great classic and seminal study, Varieties of Religious Experience. A decade later, Carl Jung introduced the concept of the collective unconscious and the idea that we may well extend beyond space and time and ultimately be part of a higher dimension of reality than that represented by the physical world. He believed that our consciousness could tap into this higher reality, drawing from it intuitive and creative insight, wisdom, and direction. Developments within the past 20 years in psychology, at first loosely combined under the general heading of the new psychology and more recently humanistic psychology, have explored the possibility of expanding awareness to enhance creativity and reveal a deeper meaning and purpose in life. Fathered by Abraham Maslow, humanistic psychology ushered in the human potential movement, and in 1973 was accepted by the American Psychological Association as its newest branch. Maslow was the first major American psychologist to postulate that man is an evolutionary creature whose higher nature seeks actualization just as surely as does his lower nature, and that sickness arises when this upward evolution, this need for self-actualization, is blocked. Maslow said, quote, "The higher nature includes the need for meaningful work, for responsibility, for creativeness, for being fair and just, for doing what is worthwhile, and for preferring to do it well," end quote. This is in contrast to man's lower nature, which seeks gratification of the animal drives and instincts. Terms of this new psychology, such as peak and ecstatic experience, self-transcendence and self-actualization, energy flow and energy fields, love and consciousness, the spiritual dimension, create a language similar to that of mystics, saints, and spiritual leaders. Its attitude towards self-exploration and personal involvement is opposed to the requirement of the classic scientific method for an objective observer. Investigators in this newest branch of psychology believe that one can go into states such as meditation, hypnosis, sensory deprivation, and other altered states of consciousness and still make valid observations and collect worthwhile data. No less than a revolution in human consciousness is occurring in our culture, with research being conducted into the nature of mind and consciousness from almost every scientific and humanistic viewpoint. Reflecting the scope and diversity of this new field of interest, courses are turning up on campuses across the country. Experimental Johnson College at the University of Redlands in California bases an entire four-year course on a new transpersonal psychology, which combines the humanistic and the spiritual. The Curriculum Committee of Harvard University recently approved an undergraduate course in altered states of consciousness. Once a year, a diverse group of medical doctors, psychologists, anthropologists, physicists, philosophers, and holy men from around the world meet at Council Grove, Kansas, to study the subject of expanded consciousness. The meeting is co-sponsored by the Association for Humanistic Psychology and the Menninger Foundation. My own experience with this burgeoning movement, however, has not been of much help in my struggle to comprehend Sai Baba. How is it that, although appearing to recognize man's spiritual nature, many therapists still get caught up in what, to my intuition and common sense, seem such absurd and conflicting issues? For example, the topics: should a professional therapist go to bed with his patient if they are mutually attracted, was actually aired at a forum of the Association for Humanistic Psychology. Such misplaced concerns are absolutely contrary to the atmosphere which surrounds Sai Baba. The direction for so many seems toward increasing emotional expression at the expense of a disciplined code of morality, in which I include the surrender of oneself to God, regulating the physical plane of existence subservient to a higher relationship with the divine. Is such a code outdated, or worse, a pathological denial of one's basic identity? Or is there indeed hidden truth in a spiritual morality considered repressive by most Western behavioral scientists? Surprisingly enough, the phenomena of expanded consciousness seen from the point of view of the poet are the dynamics of love. Love and consciousness, I found, are intimately related, perhaps one and the same. Yet, even here, in investigating a central aspect of the human condition, which one would think of major interest and importance to psychiatry, I found modern psychiatric knowledge grossly limited. The love that I witnessed in India extended beyond the concepts of emotions and feelings as defined in psychiatry. In Sai Baba's presence, I learned that the deepest and most profound experience of love grows out of a devotional attitude toward the divine, a principle which, it goes without saying, is almost completely absent from modern psychiatric theory and practice. In India, I was taught that our basic identity is, in fact, pure and selfless love. In its pure form, love may be best defined in spiritual terms as the divine spark at our very center, the essence of our identity, the manifestation of our truest nature, which, like consciousness, reaches out and expands until it embraces all that we perceive or know. For psychiatrists who believe that human nature is fundamentally animalistic, motivated by the pleasure-pain principle and the need for some form of self-gratification, Sai Baba's demonstration of selfless love is an impressive revelation. In my attempt, then, to integrate what I observed with what I know of psychiatry, I have tried to define areas of limitation in modern psychiatric theory and practice, to point out how a growing body of knowledge concerning the dynamics of consciousness and love is revealing an added human dimension which psychiatry needs to consider and investigate seriously. I must warn you that although I have tried to describe my encounter as objectively as possible, I found during the first of my 5 trips to India that the method of being an objective and non-participating observer was an absolute obstruction toward understanding. I could not afford to take shelter in the role of visiting expert. To understand these phenomena, I had to become a part of them. Indeed, I took the direction from Sai Baba himself, quote, "You must dive deep into the sea to get the pearls. What good is it to dabble among the waves near the shore and swear that the sea has no pearls in it and that all tales about them are false? So also, if you must realize the full fruit of this avatar, dive deep and get immersed in Sai Baba." End quote. To the most rigid in the scientific tradition, this will seem a terrible transgression. But in the main body of the behavioral sciences, there is a healthy regard for this approach and acceptance of its validity. For even in the heat of intense internal and external reactions, it is possible to maintain a position of witness and observer. In my encounter with Sai Baba, I believe I maintained that position, and in so doing, I feel that I bring to this account an added dimension, a first-hand observation of experiencing my own soul in transformation. Who is Sai Baba? If his powers are genuine, how can he lead one deeper into the innermost mysteries of our existence? These were the basic questions with which I started my search. If you are still with me, I invite you to join my journey toward this holy man. to explore an exciting and inspirational realm of human possibility through this enigmatic figure.